This is Tina with Recovery 101, and I am privileged today to have Alicia with me. And so, Alicia, welcome to Recovery 101.
Thanks for having me, Tina.
So tell me a little bit about life as a child.
Well, it wasn't easy, but it wasn't bad.
So explain that to me.
So I was surrounded by a lot of people, so I had a large family. I felt loved, but at the same time, at times, felt alone.
So explain what feeling alone meant. I understand you can be in a crowded room and still feel alone. So explain how that looked as a child.
Alone as in the sense of, I didn't have any siblings, but that's not the alone that I felt. The alone was more of, I felt like I wasn't seen, felt like I wasn't heard, kind of had to just do my own thing.
Okay. So the large family was extended family?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Did they live close to you?
Yeah. We were always together. My parents, my parents were divorced when I was really young. My dad had a large family also, but I spent more time with my mom's side of the family. And she had five siblings, and we were always together. It was always some sort of celebration or hangout session or just, when I was super little, it was fun. From what I saw, they made things fun. There was a lot of laughter, a lot of joy, happiness, a lot of games and playing around. But when they weren't around, it was really quiet. It was kind of, I want to say, dark.
Okay. So was mom loving? Was she one who liked to encourage you in your journey, or was she off doing her own thing?
Yeah, she was off doing her own thing. I know she was trying the best that she could, but addiction really had taken over in that family, and she was trying to work, trying to provide, but still trying to find her own identity. She was hanging out with a lot of people, friends and family, like I said, all the time. Yeah, so, but I wasn't really a part of it. That makes
so
sense.
Was addiction your mother's world, or was it just the family's world?
Addiction actually was on both sides, my father's side and my mom's side. So it was my mother's world, but also extended family and generational.
Okay. So you felt unseen and unheard. So what was that like once you started into school? Did you feel more heard and seen then?
I was a shy one. I was more reserved. Felt like I didn't belong. Felt like I didn't fit in. I felt like other people were happier.
So as you were growing up, was there ever a place where you felt heard and seen and accepted?
Yeah, when I stepped into the drug world.
Yeah. For me, that was where I felt heard and seen. Mm-hmm. Was I could feel more relaxed mm-hmm. when I had several drinks in me. So tell me about that world for you.
Yeah, so as I said, I was kind of born into it, but I think I started realizing and seeing what it was at the age of 9 or 10, and cigarettes were exposed to me, offered to me. And that was by family. And then in school, I don't know, I can't remember.
So cigarettes was the first thing that you tried.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
When did you start into the other lifestyle?
So then it was, I think 12 years old, and it was marijuana. So I was smoking pot. And then it was alcohol, liquor, shortly after that, And then I would say, that's when I started thinking I had friends. Okay. I was valued. I was, you know, I had ways and I had access to get these things. And so, you know, people would come to me, they would need things. So I felt wanted and included. And then shortly after that, it was, you know, the street drugs and things like that, the harder ones. And I still had access to that and could get that anywhere and give it to anyone who needed it and wanted it. And it's kind of come and go as you please kind of thing. And I didn't really have anyone reprimanding or watching what I was doing. So it's controlling my own environment.
So did you finish high school?
I did. Mm-hmm. I hit it well.
Good. Mm-hmm. I mean, I guess that you, I guess it's good that you finished high school.
Yeah.
So, did boys enter into any of that mixture?
Oh, yeah.
Tell me about that.
Yeah. The lack of love growing up when, you know, a boy would look at me or like me or be interested in me, it felt good. So, of course, it went into deeper interaction with them.
And looking for love in all the wrong places.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And so tell me about post-high school. What did that look like?
Well, actually, we would have to back on up a little bit. I was still in high school when I met my now husband.
Okay.
And we met in the bad crowd. We met in that crowd of addiction and doing drugs. And he would tell you he came to me looking for drugs because he knew he could get to me. And let's see, I was probably 16 when I met him. We fooled around like that for a while, 17. There was something in him that I saw in him that was not like the rest of them. And I got a little bit nervous, and he started saying he loved me and all of that stuff. And I was a little scared. I was like, no, you can't come in and tell me this. And I was feeling things that I didn't feel before, ever before. And so we broke up for a little while, and then we got back together and decided that that lifestyle is not anything that we need in our lives, and that God had so much more for us. And I remember him one day, he said, someday we're going to walk the righteous path. And it was very true. It took me a little while because of the stubbornness and all the control, but I realized that God had so much more, and so did he. And we quit drugs. We had kids. We had kids at an early age. I was 20. And we weren't married at that time, thinking that we're just doing everything that we thought we were doing right, based off what we've saw and grew up in. And little by little, the things, the sinful nature was, you know, chipping away, falling off. And I'll be honest, the kids are what gave us the final, like, we need to break this. We can be chain breakers, and we can break this off of ourselves and help our kids to grow up in an atmosphere that we didn't know. We had no idea. So this point forward, we were walking into something that was unfamiliar to us.
So tell me what a chain breaker is. I know what it is, but the audience may not know what that means and what that looks like.
Yeah. So when you have generations, in my case, of addiction, and you decide for yourself that you want to stand up and you want to break off everything that has been passed down to you from previous generations. Like my mother, you know, caught up in addiction, and her father caught up in addiction. Before that, his father caught up in addiction. It's a lifestyle that you're born into, and you have a will inside of you, and Jesus has so much for you, and he gives you that option, that choice. And I decided to be that choice, to take that choice, and to say, I've had enough. I'm going to end it here. It's going to end with me, and my kids are going to be set free. And because of that, because your kids are set free, generations before you can have a similar effect and be set free from things too. And that there's a lot of hope there.
So did you pray? Tell me how that looks, because like I said, I know what that looks like. I had to pray that for my own children as well, but the listener may not know what that looks like. How do you actively break generational curses?
Yeah. So it doesn't have to be special. It doesn't have to be a formula. You just, for me personally, I had enough of it, and I knew that there was something more, and I knew God in my life, but I didn't feel him. And for me, it was literally surrendering. It was saying the words, I surrender, I give up all of these things that are holding me back, and I hand it over to you, and beautiful things just start to happen.
So it wasn't a polished, beautiful prayer.
No.
It was just from your gut,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, straight from my heart.
Right.
Yeah.
And so did it just happen overnight?
No, actually. Well, I can say I'm 7 years sober, and I'm still learning, still growing. It's a process.
But it starts with you wanting a change,
determination,
correct?
And being willing. Yep.
So did your husband come right alongside you, or was that a process as well?
Yeah, he did. I knew that, and throughout our addiction with drugs, there were things that would happen in my life, and I would say, I'm done with it. I'm done with it. I quit. And it would take him time. And yeah, I would nag at him and say, this isn't good for you. But that wasn't doing anything. It was probably making him want it even more. And so it was a process, and it didn't happen at the same time. When I finally quit, alcohol was our last thing that we needed to give up in the drug and alcohol stuff. And he was 3 months behind me, and something happened to him, just a circumstance that happened to him. And he said, I'm done. And actually, you know, there were people around him that he was speaking life into, but still doing it himself. And he realized his eyes were open to, I can't do that. I can't speak life to them when I'm doing it myself. And that was a big factor in why he quit as well.
So after you both quit, life just got peachy, right?
Oh, peachy. No. Actually, I think a lot of people here, you know, mountains and valleys, and there's highs and lows, and it's not going to be easy at all times. And there are some times that are just beautiful and rewarding for stepping out of the muck.
So in the low times, what keeps you from going back to
Jesus? Yeah. It actually was pretty easy for me to give things up. But I have a stubbornness to me, and I think that there can be good characteristics of that and bad. And I am determined and won't ever go back. And that's a vow that I make with God. Just saying for myself that I will never go back to that. I don't want that in my life, and I want my kids to be free. And if I want them to be free and other people around me to be free and to see that they can have freedom, then I'm going to stand my ground. And Jesus is the one that, he's my rock. He's the one that I stand upon. And his words and his promises, his truth just helps us get through those valleys.
So tell me about And I'm speaking from a personal side here because I know your children. So tell me the fruit of you being sober. Yeah. Tell me about your children.
So I can share an experience actually that happened when I started repenting. Sometimes that sounds like a very strong word, but it's not. It's an okay word. It just means that you're sorry, you're genuinely sorry for what you've done in the sinful nature, and you want to step into something better. And when I personally started doing that for myself, I could see the things falling off of my oldest daughter, and she... But there would just be things that would be exposed. I don't really want to go into her personal detail, but I could see things. There was very, very clear evidence of when I started praying and letting go of things, that it was happening with my children, and that they can see it and recognize it because they saw us in our mess. They saw us in the beginning of their lives. Our youngest, he was just a little guy before elementary even. So just a little guy, but they saw us in that disaster and that mess, and they can look at us today and they tell people, and they see the difference in our lives then and now. We have peace. They talk about peace quite a bit.
So in your own children, do you see them being strong in their faith because of what you all have been through?
Yeah, they know, because they've, like I said, they saw the muck, and now they see, and so that shows them Jesus. They know that there's a God, and that they can trust him, and that he has better plans for our life.
You were stating the other day something so beautifully, that once a week that you all do a devotional together.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me about the last one that you had.
Yeah, so we're reading a book. It's called The Awe of God by John Bevere. And we're reading a chapter, actually two chapters. One was about the glory of God and his presence, which is so beautiful. And the following chapter was...
But tell me the effects of what you saw,
right,
in your children.
Right, but I'm trying to think of that title. Anyway, the gist of it was he was talking about the value. That was it. It was the value that God has on us, for us. And do we really receive that value that he has for us? Do we see the value in ourselves that God has for us? And in that, do we see the value of others? And then we read a chapter or a verse, some scripture out of 1 John 4, and it was talking about loving God and loving our brother and sister. And after my husband had read that verse, my youngest son, he just looked up, and he was caught kind of by surprise, and he said, "Oh!" And he looked over to his brother, and he said, "Will you forgive me for not valuing you the way that God does?" And he just started asking for forgiveness, and then my other son just jumped in and forgave him and started asking for forgiveness himself. And he said, "Even my thoughts, sometimes my thoughts aren't so great of you, you know, when they get mad at each other or frustrated or whatnot."
So put yourself back 10 years and think about that night where your boys are talking so beautifully to each other. Would you have ever seen yourself in that kind of setting 10 years ago?
No.
So as a mom, what would you say to a mom out there struggling in addiction?
I would say that God values you more than you ever even could even imagine, and that he has so much for you.
And that she can have that kind of family time like you have now.
Yeah.
I appreciate you being so vulnerable And I appreciate you coming on and telling us your story. And so thank you for coming, Alicia.
Yeah, thank you.